This is Talking Business. I'm joined now by Nicole Connolly, who's the Executive Director of Infrastructure Partners Investment Fund. G'day, Nicole.
Hi, Alan.
Now, tell us about IPIF, as you call it, Infrastructure Partners Investment Fund. When did you start it and what was the idea?
IPIF started in late 2015 and it was really... It really came about because I witnessed or observed a gap in the market over my 20-year career working in superannuation and funds management. During my career, I covered the unlisted infrastructure space and realised that quality infrastructure assets are held by only a few institutional specialist funds that require minimum investments of $5 million and $25 million or up to $25 million to invest. And it really meant that it was out of reach for a number of smaller investors such as self-managed super funds. They're growing in numbers and high net worths. So it really was... due to observing a gap in the market over the years.
And so what you did was you came up with the idea of packaging up a whole lot of small investors into that minimum kind of investment of $5 million or so into those funds. Was that hard to persuade them to do, to allow you to do that? Did you have to do a lot of talking?
Well, not really. I think there's a strong appetite from investors for quality investments, and in this environment of low interest rates, it was not difficult to teach them about the merits of unlisted infrastructure as an asset class and an investment opportunity. The large institutional super funds have been investing in this space for up to 20 years and have generated solid returns and highlighting to a new investor base that this opportunity now existed for them was not too difficult. So, yes, essentially we aggregate capital from these smaller investors and then meet the minimum investment thresholds to get access to these specialist unlisted infrastructure funds.
And what are the funds and what do they invest in? You talk about quality infrastructure assets. What are they actually?
So a number of the Australian airports, such as Melbourne, Perth, Adelaide and Brisbane, as well as a number of regulated utilities, such as the electricity distributors, Transgrid and Electranet. So these assets are infrastructure, have monopolistic type characteristics, which provide certainty over income and cash flows, as well as the prospect for solid capital gains, and the track record of the asset class over 20 years is quite strong, and in particular over periods such as the GFC, they held firm, and that's because these are essential services. Everyone needs to use power. Everyone continues to fly, even during times of economic downturn. The airlines usually have discounted ticketing to try and get passengers still flying and people through the airports. So they have a strong history of solid returns.
So tell us a bit about how it works. I mean, well, for a start, how much money have you managed to collect now in your fund?
We've raised just short of $115 million from small institutional investors, self-managed superannuation funds, high net worth investors. Our minimum investment is $50,000, so we've got over 160 investors in the fund now.
And where's that money gone? What are you investing it in?
So we've invested in three specialist funds, and these funds have exposure collectively to the airport sector of about 47%, and those assets include Melbourne, Perth, Brisbane and Adelaide Airport. We have the rest of the assets are in regulated utilities, and that includes assets such as Transgrid and Electranet here in Australia, Powerco and First Gas, which are regulated utilities in New Zealand, as well as some toll roads and some seaports as well.
And what are the funds that they're that the money is actually being managed by?
They're managed by the first one is the UTA, the Utilities Trust of Australia, which is managed by Morrison & Co. We invest in the AMP Capital Diversified Infrastructure Trust and a Colonial managed Global Diversified Infrastructure Fund. So there's three institutional grade unlisted infrastructure funds that we invest in.
And tell us about how the fees work. I presume they charge a fee and then you charge a fee.
Yes, they do charge a fee. On a complete look-through basis, the fees are about 1.4 to 1.5%. So I say about because it depends on the allocation to the underlying managers and they have varying fee structures.
What are they roughly? I mean, are they all below 1%? Is that how it works?
Yes. So we've got all three of them are below 1%. The highest exposure our fund has is to the lowest fee fund. So Morrison & Co. charge 33 basis points for access to their portfolio and no performance fee. And really, it's a $6 billion fund, so they have the ability to charge lower fees. And then AMP around 70 basis points and Colonial around 90.
And what sort of performance do those funds produce? I mean, do they pay an income and capital gain? I mean, what sort of income? What do the investors in your fund, what can they expect?
They can expect, going forward, they can expect between 8 to 10% per annum over the next 5 years, and that's roughly equally split between income and capital growth. Now, that's certainly not guaranteed, but historically these managers have generated those type of returns over a 20-year period. In fact, they've been higher than that. I'm actually suggesting that the returns are going to be lower in that range of 8 to 10, just given where we are in the interest rate cycle.
Now, as you say, you've got close to half of your money in airports, the ones that are unlisted. Are those airports that you're in, Melbourne and I think Brisbane and so on, have they done better than the Sydney Airport, which is actually listed, so that small investors can actually invest directly in Sydney Airport, but they, as you say, they can't invest in Melbourne and Brisbane? So are the ones that are unlisted, have they performed better as investments than Sydney Airport, do you know?
The unlisted airports over the last 12 months, or if you look at the last financial year, have generated between 17 and 20% per annum. So that's the four airports you mentioned. And essentially, what you're getting with the unlisted exposure is less volatility. So while Sydney Airport and Auckland Airport as well have performed very, very well, they are subject to a lot of market volatility, and you certainly don't get that in the unlisted space. And historically, the unlisted airports have traded at quite a discount to where the listed airports are trading.
Well, in fact, as I speak to you, I'm just looking at Sydney Airport and the share price has been absolutely flat for 12 months. Gone precisely nowhere. So far, far less than 17 or 20%, that's for sure.
Yeah, and look, I think that shows you that the underlying assets are essentially the same. They're all driven by economic growth, regulated aeronautical revenues, car parking fees and property, but market dynamics can play a lot in the performance of listed markets, and that's why we think unlisted makes a lot of sense for investors because it just takes away that volatility and noise that you get from listed markets.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because most of the big super funds have got a reasonable allocation to infrastructure, but as you say, smaller investors with their self-managed super funds find it more difficult to get that sort of exposure. What is the percentage allocation that the big super funds tend to have to infrastructure?
Over the years, it's ranged from 7 to 12% of their portfolio in infrastructure, and the SMSF.
And is that what you're saying? Is that what you're saying that SMSF should do?
Well, they certainly an allocation of up to 5%, and is I think makes sense in any in a superannuation fund. They provide great diversification. But if you look at how SMSFs are structured from an asset allocation point of view, they're usually dominated by Australian equities, real estate, and cash. So certainly adding an exposure to unlisted infrastructure diversifies their investment programs quite nicely. And it is certainly, people say that infrastructure has similar characteristics to property, but what we've found over time is that the income component of property is more driven by the economic environment. So there's more stability in the income yield you get from infrastructure versus property. Having said that, I think there's a place in a portfolio for access to both. They're not substitutes, but they certainly complement one another.
Great to talk to you, Nicole. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Alan.
That was Nicole Connolly, who's the founder and CEO of Infrastructure Partners Investment Fund.